what is that relation between the artistic and aesthetic work that you do and the activist work that you do? And is there like a clear line, or maybe like you said, these things are kind of interdependent on each other and one informs the other?
I don't know that the lines are that clear for me, but I wanted to backtrack a little bit to something that the poet and scientist Sandra Steingraber wrote in one of her books, which was about how the sort of pollution that happens manifests itself not just in our bodies as cancers or as illnesses, but it also manifests outside of our bodies in pollution, right? And so, again, that connection between the inside and the outside is a lot more urgent than people sometimes realize or think about. And so when I think about activism sort of being out there and, say, the creative work, which people tend to think of as being in here or somewhere, right? Like, I'm somebody who needs a lot of private time and quiet time and all of that. But that doesn't mean I'm not a social person or not in the world in various ways. And I don't know, I see them flowing in and out of each other. I don't always draw a clear line between them. But I would say that one of my mentors, Claire Harris, wonderful poet, lived in Calgary for most of her life. She edited my first book of poetry, Monkey Puzzle, and her advice to me was, don't let them call you an activist. Because as soon as you do that, it's somehow you're off on the margins, you're being out there, and really what you're doing is what anybody should be doing. So I always kind of hear her warning in the back of my head, like, and I'm a little bit cautious of people being activist figures. And that said, I think you do what you need to do. And in this kind of world that we live in, that often gets framed as activism. And at the end of the day, I don't really care if it is or isn't. My question is, what needs to get done? And how do we get it done together?
And specifically your work fighting against the Site C Dam.
But also for the Peace River.
For the Peace River, true. And
So the other thing that's interesting rhetorically is the way the framing of that dam has happened, right? The naming of it depersonalizes it, dehumanizes it, abstracts it, you know, all of that. But if you actually go up and spend time on the Peace River, you see how incredibly beautiful it is. You taste the food that's grown on the riverbanks. Like, it is an incredible and a very precious place. It is truly a sacred place. It's named after a peace treaty between the Cree and the Deniza peoples, and it's the site of many sacred burial sites, cultural sites, gathering sites, medicines, hunting, gathering, migration for moose and elk, and there's just a lot that happens in that space that gets obliterated when you just sort of reduce it to Site C or something. So I think part of the challenge, because this is a river that's had two previous dams built on it, right? And most of us in BC, if we're using electricity, we rely on the electricity from the previous dams. And so we owe this debt of reciprocity to ensure that there aren't further sacrifice zones on the Peace River. There was way too much devastation that happened. People who were traumatized, people who were displaced, homes violently destroyed through the previous dams. Like, it's got to be very clear that the dams are very destructive, they're not clean, and there's a huge debt that I and every other person who uses electricity in this province owes to that valley. Mm-hmm. That dam has been stopped twice before historically, and this is the third time they're trying to ram it down the Indigenous people's throats. And it is basically cultural genocide. It is environmental racism, and it is just abominable that this could happen in this day and age when we're supposedly striving for reconciliation.